Have to be really good today. I talked to her yesterday a little bit about, because you know, I'm going to tell you what, being a pastor is not a lot of fun because all the time, because you get to point out, you have to point out to people where they're not walking or living within the sheepfold, right? That's the job. That's not fun, but it's part of the deal. And so I understand sometimes I kind of get a little bit cranky. And so I made a little crank after Katie wrote this. And she said, you want to read? Do you want to read what I wrote? Because I proofread it. And I went, why did you write about me? Yeah. Sometimes I don't act like I should. How many are in that same boat? Like right now, I'm a little upset. I asked somebody to read today. They're not here. So I'll read. Open up your Bibles to the book of Matthew. Let's go for the lucky number 13. This story is written in three different places in the New Testament, all the synoptic gospels, as I told the men yesterday, and most of them know what those are. What are they? Matthew, Mark, and Luke. You'd be interested to know, if you don't know already, that there are no parables in the book of John. Jesus doesn't use parables in the books of John. He tells things the way they are. A parable is a simple story that tries to describe, explain, or teach a very deep spiritual truth. And I don't know of any story that's more difficult than this one right here. It's given me problems for decades. I never stop learning when I turn to it, but Matthew chapter 13, we're going to start reading in verse 1. Maybe you can see some of the situations that might be causing some problems. Let me give you just a little bit of background here. Jesus has been moving and he has started his ministry and he's been everywhere he goes from town to town. He's been healing people. Everybody knows who he is as far as what he's claiming. And they're going and chasing after the miracles. When Jesus is done displaying his miraculous powers, which the Old Testament prophets have said, this is what the Son of God is going to look like when he comes. So when they're all done, Jesus then proceeds to tell them, I am the Messiah, I'm the one prophesied, I am God. Which didn't make a lot of people happy. Because they didn't believe what he said because they knew him. He was the carpenter's son from Nazareth. He's not God. And so as Jesus went places, he made people mad. They wanted the free stuff. They wanted the handout. They wanted to be taken care of. But they didn't want to step up to the responsibility of what it would mean to receive something from God and then not do what God commanded. He's in a town and the masses are so big, they are working so hard, trying to keep everything orderly in the crowd from pressing in on him, and they're tired. And in the middle of the thing, they end up going into a house, Peter's house, and somebody knocks on the door. Jesus, is Jesus in there? Yeah. Would you tell him to come out here because his mother and his brothers, his family's out here and they're asking for him to come out and talk to him? Jesus says, who is my mother? Who is my brother? You see, it says in Mark 3:21, turn there real, keep your finger here, turn it, because this is an eye-opener, especially when you talk to anybody who's Catholic or has a Catholic background. Mark 3:21 tells us something in depth. 3:21 simply says this. Jesus entered the house again, crowd gathered, just like I said, so he and his disciples were not even able to eat. When his family heard about this, his mother, his brothers, they went to take charge of him, for they said, read it with me, he is out of his mind. They thought he was cuckoo, even his mother. So everywhere Jesus goes, he causes a problem. But he never lets up. He never stops. I'm the one, follow me. Do what I say. And he says that. My mother and brother and family are those who do what I say. So let's read the story. Matthew 13. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it, while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root or couldn't get any moisture, it says in Luke. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil where it produced the crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. He who has ears, who has ears here? I don't see anybody missing any. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. The disciples came to him and asked, why do you speak to the people in stories, parables? Why do you do that? This is going to blow your mind. Jesus said that the knowledge of the secrets of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Whoever has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away. That is why I speak to them in parables. And these are quotes directly from Isaiah. Though seeing, they'll not be able to see. Though hearing, they do not hear nor understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. You will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You'll be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart is become callous. They hardly hear with their ears. They have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For I tell you the truth, many prophets and righteous men longed to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear it. Listen to what the parable of the sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is the seed sown along the path. The one who received the seed that fell on the rocky place is the man who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since it has no root, it lasts only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, he quickly falls away. The one who received the seed that fell among the thorns is the man who hears the word, but the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, choke it, making it unfruitful. But the one who received the seed that fell on good soil is the man who hears the word and understands it. He produces a crop yielding 100, 60, or 30 times what is sown. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading of this word. Talked about music in church and how over the centuries it has gotten worse and more of a problem, and there's this now argument you've heard me say over and over about people who have gone to the point where they spend their time worshiping and swaying back and forth and saying the same courses over and over and over. I've told you that God has, from his word we know, hosts of angels that surround him continually. Whatever time means, you know, because we've heard some people say that there's no time in heaven since it's eternal, but God has his angels around him proclaiming his holiness continually. Which begs the question, do I need to beg him continually to hear what I think of him? God, you are so good. I love you so much. You're so perfect. I worship you. And we put that to a tune and keep swaying back and forth. And a question that I have, because I question everything, is does that add anything to God? God doesn't need anything to add to him. God is God. But then when we get the song like this, where we have the word faith coming in place, we see a reversal of that process. Now God is coming down into us, and he is trying to say, here's what I want from you, and I want you to follow me while I change you into my image. So who's doing the instigating? Who's doing the encouraging? Who's doing the proclaiming? Who's doing the one saying, over here? It's God. He's the one telling us the truth about ourselves. He doesn't need us to tell him anything that he is, because he already knows who he is. We're the one that messed up. In the parable of the sower, we have four different kinds of ground that we're going to be talking about. Now, maybe Jesus could have come up with some other kinds of soil, but he didn't. He could have maybe limited it down to two, but he didn't. He gave us four types. The hard part is that we need to be able to find out who's what in the story, and especially we need to find out who am I in the story. Am I the sower? Behold, the King James Version says, I love that. Behold, a sower went forth to sow. That sounds so pretty. It sounds, you know, King's English is wonderful. It's not really wonderful when you're doing it. I mean, back in the day, they didn't have sophisticated equipment. Yesterday, after men's breakfast, a gang of us came over here and we started this garden, if you looked out back. It kind of grew a little bit bigger than we had originally started. We have a situation where we put a fence around there, but it wasn't until after we did something else. Rob came over with a machine and he took off the grass that was on top of the soil, leaving it bare. When that grass was pulled off, now we just have a sunken area that's all sand. And sand doesn't really grow crops that well. It needs something else. And so Jason made arrangements to have some compost brought in and dumped in place. And so yesterday a bunch of us came over, and while it was hot, we just started pushing all kinds of stuff around and bringing the compost in and putting it over top. And then Greg grabbed hold of his rototiller. He got a brand new rototiller and he started. I never ran a rototiller before. I couldn't wait to get my hands on that baby. But Steven beat me to it. I said, hey, Pinker, you need somebody to take a hand on that. And he goes, I'll do it. Man, he's an animal on that thing. He did 3/4 of it. And I said, well, I gotta move now or I'm not going to get any. So I relieved him for a little bit. I got to tell you, my arms were a little sore last night. Churning that compost in with the sand and loosening it up so that it will take the seed and prepare the soil so that that seed has a better chance of sprouting and growing. That makes sense. I didn't know when we were going to do it. I really didn't. I had no idea. It wasn't even my idea. I don't farm. Greg had given me a bucket with a couple of different stems like this of melons. He said, plant these at home. How can you go wrong? You dig a hole and you stick them in the ground. They're already sprouted. They were dead in 3 days. Don't give me anything to grow. It won't grow. So I'm just trying to kind of like, well, I'll help out, whatever. But when it comes to actually doing the planting, I'm not the guy you want. I have no experience in that. And so the idea came up. I knew now that I am going to be involved. Why? Because I'm the preacher. You didn't sign any contract with me saying that I'm supposed to plant anything for you and feed you that real food. But I know just by virtue of who I am, and I'm part of this body, that I'm going to be helping with the garden. So I did. Well, the way it worked out, Rob came immediately, took the stuff off. Immediately, Jason, 2 days later, came in and put the compost in. I ordered the parts for the fence and all, and it all just came in, and I saw that we needed, Peaker's time was going to be taken up, and so there was a limited window as when we could do this, unless we put it off for another week. And I've had so many people ask me, when are we going to? So I just said, go ahead, let's just do it after men's breakfast. So I sent the text out. After men's breakfast, men and women, children, anybody who wants can come and join doing the garden. I got a text from Frankie. You like my cup Frankie got me? Pastor, warning, anything you say or do could be used in a sermon. Frankie was a little upset at me because he said, we're in Orlando and we're coming home. What? Yeah, we cut our weekend trip short. We're coming home. I didn't want to text that. I wanted to talk to him. So I hit the button and I hit dial and I get Frankie on him. And I could tell by the tone of his voice that he was a little irritable. I said, don't come home. You're with your family. You made a fun weekend. He said, I told you I was going to help with the garden. Your timing is horrible. But I'm coming home. Now, is Frank a Jesus guy or is he a Frank guy? There are 4 types of soil. God, through Christ, tells us in the book of Luke and in Mark, it tells us the explanation of what is what. And the sower is who? The sower is God. God is the one who sows the seed. What is the seed? The what? The Word of God. What is the Word of God? Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ only has one thing to offer us, and that is the gospel of grace. You deserve the lake of fire. I'll pay that penalty for you, set you free. So the gospel is the seed. God is scattering the seed. And it's going to fall on certain types of soil. Now, this begs a question because that causes a problem for me. That means God's an idiot. Because why would God sow seed on a rocky path? Surely he wouldn't waste seed doing that. But you see, a parable doesn't break everything down into its perfect components. And so a lot of the stuff that we're left with is that we need to pay attention and think and reason and figure out what's really going on. There are four kinds of soil. I have a good friend in Ohio who's a farmer, and he plants corn, and he does not go out and plant it into rocky ground or thorny ground. He does it properly because seed is expensive. This parable is not about God. This parable is about me. I'll let you listen because maybe it's about you too. Behold, God threw some seed out there and some fell on the path. Just figure it like a sidewalk. Is there any hope of that ever germinating and growing into anything? The only thing that's going to happen is the birds are going to come and pluck it and eat it, and it'll be a waste. What are birds in the Bible? Devil. Satan. Demon, Satan and his demons. You ever known people who are so hard-hearted that nothing gets in? You can try to talk to them, but they don't want to hear it. They just kind of live for whatever. And whatever happens to be where their heart is. Yesterday we went down to the beach with my grandkids and we walked the beach. It was a beautiful night. Oh my gosh, it was beautiful. We don't go to the beach that often. The water was nice and smooth and level, and there wasn't no heat. It was all cloudy sky, but the sun was doing some great things behind the clouds to make it beautiful. The temperature was great. And as we walked toward the beach, we heard tired. For 45 minutes. They'd already been going when I got there. The people are like, it's a good thing they didn't give me a drum. I'd be breaking out into God of the Vita or something. It's like a trance. If it feels good, do it. Go ahead and try to talk to them about something that's really critically important, like the real God, not the sun god that they're worshiping. And that's what they're doing. Tell all your friends and neighbors who come down from up north about the drum circle when they say, well, we're going to go down and see the drum circle. Just say one statement, Satan worshiper. That's what they are. And they don't even know it because they don't even care. They're hard-hearted. It feels good. Some were out there with ribbons. Some had hula hoops. I'm like, what? Hard-hearted people. Nothing gets in. Generally, they're selfish. Not going to work too hard. Pretty lazy, actually. And then you have rocky people. Rocky people are the carefree ones. They don't have any commitment. They're not willing to pay any price for the cost of any kind of a membership into anything, even church. Oh, no, 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 no. Don't want to get involved. You see those kinds of folks even in the political world. Yeah, don't bring that up. These are the kind of people who don't want to even talk about politics or religion. You've heard that? You know why they make up that statement? We don't talk about politics and religion? Because they're the two most important subjects that affect your life. Why would we want to talk about that? Jesus said that I, if you come to me, will give you living water and you will never thirst again. The problem with rocky soiled people is that the roots don't, they start to grow, the roots start to grow, but because it's so rocky and there's no depth of soil, there's no moisture. And so they're not feeding themselves any kind of water. They don't have any ability to get any nutrients or moisture to continue to grow. And so they just basically wither and die. Rocky. And then you got thorny people. I know more thorny people than I know of any other kind. These are busy bees. These are people who seem to think that they got it all together. Places to go, important people to meet. You better knock it up or you might lose your seat. You got that? I got to work. I got things to do. Places to go, people to see. Don't you understand? If you don't work, you don't make any money. I need to take a break. I need to have some fun because I'm tired of working. Thorny people. Always busy. Bzz, go, 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 go. But if you ask a question, it's like Steve Martin. Excuse me, because it's full of excuses. You know people like that? See, this is one of the reasons why Satan can't get Jesus and defeat him. He doesn't understand it because Jesus doesn't make any sense. To people who have a thorny attitude in their head, he doesn't make any sense because he said, if you want to get, the first thing you got to learn to do is what? Give. If you want to lead, the first thing you need to do is what? Follow. If you want to live, then you have to what? Die. No, we don't have time for that. No, you don't understand. The bills are due. You understand? I got to do what I got to do. I'm stepping on your toes. Well, I'm the preacher. It's my job. God doesn't care how hard you work. He wants to know how much you give. We're not even talking about your money, partially. We're talking about your life. Thorny people. I know a lot of them. Worry. Need money. Taking a break. Having a pleasure. And life just seems to go. If I'm any of those four, typically from when I was a kid, I'm a thorny guy. Because I'm a get-her-done kind of guy. I like to work. I like to do stuff. I don't want to have my world fall around because I was supposed to be doing something. I don't want it to be my fault. I want it to be some other reason. And so back in the days before I really understood and paid attention to what Jesus was trying to tell me all along, I'd work, 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 work. Did you ever try to carry water in a bucket that has a hole in the bottom? Man, that was a hard lesson. I'd carry that water thinking, man, look at this. I got this, man. All of a sudden, everything would go crazy. Things would go wrong. Things would break. You're trying to fill up an ocean with a bucket with a hole in it. Jesus said, those who don't get it, what they have will be taken away. And even what they have, they won't even be able to keep. You never seem to reach the end. It's just always a continual struggle. And then you got the guy that's working with good ground. He understands. This ain't my garden. This life is not mine. My grandkids, I don't really know where I stand with them all the time because I'm not really grumpy. Am I really grumpy? I'm not really grumpy all the time. You know, I like to have fun. I like to enjoy. But I'm never done teaching. And so when Duncan reaches over and takes something out of his brother's hands, I'm like, hey! Because it's continually, that's wrong. You don't do that. And so good people, good ground people are the kind of people who are contented, but they're never fully contented. You know what I'm saying? Because I understand that I've got the world handed to me by God, but I'm never contented where I stand in that world. I need to do more. I need to give more. What's next? What is my level of my commitment to Jesus? When I'm cleaning a room, I noticed after you guys got done cleaning, thank you so much for cleaning this church for Jesus and for us. After you spent the day, I came over probably about 6 hours after you were done, and laying right there on the floor was a cockroach, one of those palmetto bugs roach laying there, and I went... My experience tells me if they're there that soon after you left, he's dying, and if I swat at it, he's probably going to run. Get that burst energy. Ah, I got to live, you know. So if I just let him sit there, he'll die, and then I'll be able to sweep him up. But I'm going to sweep him up. Why? Because it's God's church. It's Jesus' house. We're not going to let that stay there. What is this faith business? What does it actually mean? Well, I'm sorry that I irritated Frankie, that my timing wasn't perfect, but Frank was messing with me because he knows it wasn't my timing. I don't plan this stuff. It just kind of happens. It's not my life, my world that you're trying to make happy. But he had a problem with him and Jesus. And Jesus was telling him, you need to stop what you're doing and do what I expect you to do. And that means get to the garden. How many of you are inconvenienced by Jesus on a regular basis? There's not enough hands in the air. If you love Jesus Christ and he is your personal Lord and Savior and you are working on trying to make the ground good in your life, you are going to be inconvenienced. You will not give excuses. You will not pass it off. You will look at the problem with a microscope if necessary and you will say, what do I need to do to remedy this situation? What's it going to cost? How much time? How much money? How much effort? And whatever it is, you do it. You see, the thing that doesn't make any sense to me, but I do now get into something new, is that you are responsible for the type of soil in your heart. That's the point. God's coming along and he's throwing freedom. He's throwing freedom. It's not going to cost you anything but your life. He's throwing freedom and he says, look, this is the best way. I'm going to bless you with everything. Abundance beyond all your wildest. And he even has the guts to write that. No eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor mind conceived the things God has prepared for those who what? Love him. What is love? A feeling? No, love is an action. Don't tell me you love me. Show me. That's what Jesus says. What are you doing? Inconvenience, absolutely. You see, there's an old proverb that goes along, and we just turned it into an evangelical statement here that basically will be used as a good illustration. How many here believe this chair can hold you up? Every one of you. Basically, because you're sitting one just like it. There's no reason to believe it wouldn't. But is this chair holding you up? Is it holding you up? No. Why? You're not sitting in it. So you're exercising faith without exercising faith. The chair means nothing, and the faith that you have in it mean nothing until you rest your weight upon it. So in your life, what are you doing to make the ground that displays your kind of heart into good ground? And are you doing it? I'll tell you what, God is, he doesn't start with big things. He starts off with little teeny tiny things just to see if you're paying attention. Do you believe me? Do you love me? We had a great thing happen here the other day at FLAP. We had a young man who came here only twice, and the second time he was here, I just happened to note that there was something off. And so I just asked, if you were to die today, would you know for certain you're going to heaven? And he said, what, folks? No, immediately, no. No question. Well, maybe. You know, that's a sign of somebody who wants to know because they are being honest. And so he trusted Jesus Christ. He accepted Christ on Wednesday night. That was really cool. But you see, once that happens, I don't know where we go from there other than just to say, now Jesus expects you to every day spend a little time with him. You know, we got it made today. We got cell phones. We got it made because we can get devotions by the ton on our cell phone. And I send them out. Could you imagine back in the day, all you had was the Bible, and even for many, many centuries, you didn't even have that. You just had to go by what people told you. What, you mean I got to give Jesus time? Well, how much? See, there's a problem. All of it. What do you mean all of it? All of it. Well, I can't give my time all day. You're missing the point. You don't have any time. You're dead. Your life is his. Whatever he wants you to do, you do. And that means as you go through your life, you're paying attention to what's happening and you're filtering everything through Jesus Christ and what he wants you to do. You are in charge of determining what type of soil God is going to be growing his seed. And here's the interesting thing. The key to this whole thing is the word understand. It means put it together, comprehend. He who understands, the person who has the path and rocky, or the path ground and the rocky ground and the thorny ground, they never understand it. They don't get it because here's the problem. They don't ever produce fruit. When you are saved, you are now producing fruit. And he's not telling you to go out and get other people saved. It's not about saving other people. It's about the fruit in your life and how you're moving with Christ in your obedience. You get that? And so when we have this understanding, we know that God is saying, I want you to do this. I want you to do something with my life in you. And that's going to come with a lot of inconvenience. And unfortunately today, as we've watched the great falling away in the Bible, we've seen it in our lifetime. We've watched churches just... because it's too expensive to follow Jesus. It is. I can't make it easier. As a matter of fact, if anything, my job is to help keep you on the road to make it harder. What does God want me to do? Well, that's between you and God. Is he going to tell you? Yes, he will. Are you going to hear it? That's up to you. We live in a difficult world, and it's going to get more difficult. It's going to get harder. But what are you doing because of him? What is your life? What is happening with you? Do you know whose you are? Do you know that you belong to Him? Do you believe what He says about you? And if that is where you are and you finally get that, then He's going to be telling you other things that He wants you to do, and you will follow Him at that point. I love this last song. We all know it. Stand up, we'll sing it.